Welcome to Clinical Conversations' 105th podcast. It comes to you from Journal Watch, an annotated guide to the most important current clinical literature. Go to the website at jwatch.org. I'm Joe Ilya. It's October 22nd, 2010. Well, through the wonders of modern electronic mail, we missed a connection with this week's intended guest, but fear not. In the spirit of Terry Gross, I'm presenting a podcast from the early summer, when most of you were either too busy getting the lay of the land as new house staff, or, more improbably, were on vacation. It's about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents and their risks for causing cardiovascular complications, even among the healthy. Before that, we have this brief message for you.
Quantia MD and Journal Watch are pleased to present the National Case Challenge and invite you to share your most compelling case. Case finalists will be widely promoted and viewed by tens of thousands of physicians all over the world. The grand prize winner will be selected by popular vote and receive $2,500. Each finalist receives $500. To participate, visit quantiamd.com.
The journal Circulation, Cardiovascular Quality and Outcomes released a study investigating the risk to healthy individuals from use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, called NSAIDs. In some cases, that risk is considerable. The researchers used Danish National Registries of Drug Prescriptions and Hospitalizations to construct a cohort of roughly 1 million healthy individuals aged 10 and above. The national registries also allowed them to track hospitalizations for cardiovascular causes within 30 days after starting an NSAID prescription. They found that diclofenac, sold in the U.S. and elsewhere under many names, including Voltaren, exerts the same risk for cardiovascular events as rofecoxib, which, as Vioxx, was removed from the marketplace in 2004. We've asked the principal author of the research, Dr. Emil Fosbro, to talk with us about his work. He's in the Department of Cardiology at the University Hospital in Copenhagen, Denmark. Welcome, Dr. Fosbro.
Thank you very much.
This is unique research, isn't it? You were looking at the effect of NSAIDs on healthy people. Usually, most of the work is done on people who've been admitted to the hospital for one reason or another and are taking NSAIDs. Is that right?
Yeah. The vast majority of most of the NSAID studies have been performed in different patient settings or in patients at a certain degree of cardiovascular risk. Most studies have not looked at healthy people or more general sample from the population, so it's quite unique concerning this, yeah.
And your research design was unique as well. You, in some cases, you had two actual statistical approaches, and in one approach, the patient served as their own control if they ended up hospitalized after use of NSAIDs.
Yeah, we used two generally quite different methods. The first one is a regression model, which is quite standard, a Cox model. And the second method we used was called a case crossover design, where we only look at healthy individuals who have had the event of interest, for instance, a myocardial infarction, and then we look back in time to see whether these individuals used NSAIDs right up to the event, and compared it to previously in time, mostly 30 days before that, whether they used the NSAIDs as well.
Mm-hmm.
This method can say something about the association between using these drugs up to the event, and it's been used originally for analyzing the relationship between cellular phone use and traffic incidents.
Were you surprised by the findings?
What surprises me most is that the more traditional drug, diclofenac or Voltaren, our results strongly suggest that it carries a similar risk to that of the selective COX-2 inhibitors, which is this new generation of the drugs where the cardiovascular risk has been shown quite strongly in most studies done on that. So surprisingly, this more traditional drug, which we have used for 30 years, seems to be as hazardous when talking about cardiovascular risk. And most studies on this subject, also in people with heart disease, has actually shown quite similar results all the way around for diclofenac. But most of these studies, it should be said that they're observational studies. Quite few clinical trials have been carried out on this, and they've almost all been designed to answer another question, which is concerning the risk of upper gastric bleeding and not the cardiovascular problems.
Naproxen comes out of your analysis with a relatively safe profile, at least in one form of the analysis. In the case crossover analysis, it shows considerable risk, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was for one of the endpoints, which was stroke.
Mm-hmm.
For the ischemic endpoints, which was coronary death or myocardial infarction, and naproxen was neutral.
Mm-hmm.
However, we also analyzed whether naproxen increased the risk of stroke, and we analyzed the risk of stroke by seeing at both ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes.
Mm.
Which showed that naproxen did or was associated with an increased risk in high doses. But when we look closer into the data, we also experienced that this was mostly driven by an increase in risk of hemorrhagic stroke.
Mm.
It's quite known that all of the NSAIDs increase the risk of bleeding.
Yeah.
So right now we believe that this is... This is through the risk of bleeding, not because of the ischemic events.
I see. One of my colleagues, who's an expert in addiction medicine, commented after looking at your paper that all we have left, really, in pain relief is are the opioids.
That's a big problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one should also note that NSAIDs are associated, or some of the drugs are associated with an increased cardiovascular risk, but it's still in low absolute numbers. Most of the experts on this subject say that the clinician who initiates NSAID treatment need to assess individually whether the patient really needs the drug and also take account of benefits versus risks.
Nice.
The absolute risk is very low, but the relative risk is still there, so it's traceable, although a low absolute risk.
Just to repeat that, then, it is absolutely a small risk, but the risk is still there and it's measurable.
Yeah.
So your advice to clinicians is...
From my perspective, clinicians should be aware that there could be cardiovascular problems using some of these drugs, and actually we could... try to exclude some of these problems by using the drugs that don't exert an increased cardiovascular risk. However, the most common problem with these drugs are the risk of upper gastric bleeding, which is in absolute numbers 10 times more frequent than the cardiovascular problems.
But those problems clinically are more addressable than, say, a stroke or a myocardial infarction.
Yeah, but still an upper gastric bleeding is also an important thing to think about. The mortality is about 10% for an upper gastric bleeding, which is not that far from a myocardial infarction. So,
okay. I don't mean...
It's also a serious adverse event.
I don't mean to make light of it. I'm not a clinician myself. So.
No, it's okay.
Would you think that, given your results and maybe other results to come from others, that the regulatory agencies should consider removing some more of these drugs from the marketplace?
Well, I think the first thing to look into is the over-the-counter retail.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different from one country to another, which drugs are sold over the counter and which doses and which quantities. very, very different. It could be a very good idea, from my perspective, to have some guidelines on which drugs could be retailed over the counter and which are not suited for this, because some of the drugs, I believe, a clinician should initiate and not the user or herself. For example, diclofenac, which is the main message from our study, can be bought, for instance, in Sweden, which is a neighboring country to my home country, and in quite high doses as well. So you can reach high doses with diclofenac quite easily over the counter, which I believe is not optimal.
All right. I think you've given us all fair warning. I want to thank you for spending time with us today, Dr. Fosbrough.
Welcome. Thank you for talking to me. It was great.
Here's a look at the week's top medical news. This week, the American Heart Association and the American Stroke Association offered guidelines on the prevention of recurrent stroke. The guidelines are free, and I've included a link on the website, podcasts.jwatch.org. By the way, if you want to confine yourself to a 7-page executive summary, there's one available on the Stroke website. Either way, these guidelines are worth adding to your collection. Next, some of your patients under treatment for prostate cancer with gonadotropin-releasing hormone agonists for androgen deprivation may be on drugs that have just been labeled to warn of risks of cardiovascular disease and diabetes. The drugs are marketed as Eligard, Lupron, Cinerel, Trelstar, Vantus, Viador, and Zoladex. Next, dabigatran, or is that dabigatran, has been approved for stroke prevention in the face of atrial fibrillation. The FDA, in announcing the approval, says that the monitoring necessary to achieve the same purpose with warfarin isn't necessary with dabigatran. Finally, one from last week. The FDA now says that bisphosphonates might indeed increase risks of atypical femoral fractures. The agency suspects that the greatest risk is among patients who've been on the drugs for 5 years or longer, and thus is urging physicians to reevaluate the need for the drugs in long-use patients. Well, that's it for Conversation 105. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adoriano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thank you for listening.